Session number 16427, Major Thomas Ward, Reel 2.
Major Ward, Reel 2. I think you were saying that TA camp was rushed because you'd only been in the battalion for about a fortnight when you went.
I don't say the camp was rushed when we got there, but I mean, we just sort of decided to settle down. It was rather like a scout camp, if you really, you know. We lacked instruction on procedures and that kind of thing, and daily orders, that was all. But we learned about that, you know, order for the day and that kind of thing, and what the officer should do about this. But of course, in reality, you've got a sergeant or somebody doing that, haven't you? But we didn't at the time.
When the battalion went off for this camp, was it at full strength?
No.
How many of you were there?
I only remember five officers, the original five officers. But very shortly after that, others joined.
What about the other ranks? How many?
The other ranks, so 200 or something like that.
So in effect, you had about, well, company and a half to two companies.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And all volunteers.
Yes, apart from the odd regular soldier who came to strengthen us.
And what about equipment and uniform? Were you all properly uniformed and kitted out?
Not immediately. No, we were before we were called up.
Not before the camp?
No, that's right.
What were you wearing? Were you wearing civilian clothes or...?
Sports jackets, I think. Yes, we were given a guidance on what to wear, I think. But we very quickly got properly dressed after camp. And by the time we called up, I had my officer's uniform. We were told where to go and get fitted and so on.
You had to go to a military tailor for that?
Yes.
Did you find the uniform comfortable?
Yes. We didn't have battle dress at the time. That came in later.
How did battle dress compare to the first sort of uniform that you wore?
Oh, much more practical. If you wear your service dress, then you've got to wear a Sam Brown and that kind of thing, and you know, you're not usually wanting to do that, or shouldn't do that when you're doing various exercises and things. But that was all soon adjusted, but obviously that had been, I think, when the, that, well, that had been anticipated, because when the battalion was formed, obviously they had to think about clothing and so on. So I didn't really think it was very much a problem, because we were just starting.
What about the boots?
Well, we were issued with boots, yes, but officers were allowed to buy their own boots, brown boots, not the black ones. Yes, I don't. That's all I can remember about the clothing. But it seemed to be fairly. It went pretty quickly. We got it organised pretty quickly. But we had to help ourselves by going to these tailors and getting fitted out. I remember I went to Tyler's in Hull, and they were doing several. Very good business.
What about your soldiers?
soldiers were issued with, it wasn't first, it was a type of wasn't quite like the battle dress we wore later on, but it improved, the dress improved as and became more practical, put it that way. And of course officers wore battle dress as well as the soldiers. And the only difference was that we had our rank on the shoulder. Unless we were parading or something like that, then we're in service dress. Or in the evening, we're in service dress. And we had to buy the evening dress.
Mess kit.
Didn't get much use of that, but by Jove, it was difficult to get the boots on and off and so on.
So you went off on camp, and did you do any tactical training while you were in the TA camp?
Well, we went off on marches, and we pretended to the enemy was behind the bushes and that kind of thing.
Did you have any weapons?
No.
When you went on a march, roughly how far would you go?
Oh, 5 miles, something like that.
What sort of ground were you exercising over?
Well, we were at Halton Camp in Morecambe. That had been a centre for camping, military-wise, for a long time. The facilities were there really for...
Was it a hutted camp?
Both, hutted and tented. I think we were in the tents.
You were used to sleeping under campus, weren't you?
Only in the scouts. We didn't do it as a family.
Mm. But you could be comfortable in the field, presumably.
Oh yes. But, I'd say it wasn't a hobby of mine going camping. Really, it's just.
What sort of physical condition were you in those days?
Oh, pretty good, actually. I'm a very keen tennis player. That we played winter and summer. I played a bit of football, but not a lot. Soccer. I played rugby at school, but didn't pursue that. But, yes, my main activity was tennis.
What sort of condition were your soldiers in? Were most of them in good physical shape?
Oh, I think it varied. There were... one or two who liked to just sit about and were not very energetic. The others were fairly athletic. They sort themselves out in that respect, don't they? Yes. And you can be sure that if there's a football about, there's sooner a game of football and so on. I enjoyed organising a game of football. And in fact, when we were called up and life wasn't particularly active in defending our vulnerable points in Hull, because we were not being attacked or anything, I arranged a football team. And we had Stevenson of Leeds United, who was an international in the battalion. And of course, I tried to build the team around him. And I did, in fact, take a team to Beverley Grammar School to play them. And that gave the schoolboys great thrill because he was well known as an international. I remember he played inside right and I played inside left in that match. I think we beat them.
You mentioned the vulnerable points in Hull that you guarded after being embodied. What sort of places were you deployed to protect?
Well, it was the electricity and the gas. That's terribly vulnerable, the gas. Also the railway station and that kind of thing. There was a good military exercise, if you like, because it was new to us, and we learned how to do it. I mean, it has to be done properly, otherwise it's not effective.
How did you do it? What is the best way to do it?
Well, you have a guard on all the time, relieved at certain hours, and in charge would be an NCO, and the officer would make sure that everybody was alert, and you'd keep going round to see that they were doing the job. Sometimes, if they were spread out, you're delegated to another NCA now to look after certain points, that kind of thing. But the company, the battalion was growing then, you know, early days, and of course we're getting stronger each time, and we've got more men. But, you know, this has been done by chaps who never had a rifle in their hand. And what would have happened if we'd been attacked the first week or two? We wouldn't have been able to put up much of a show.
Do you know what sort of threat you were supposed to be facing?
Well, I think really it was from the air. Was really the particularly in Hull, and of course Hull was very easy to find. They only got to fly up the Humber and pick out the main things, the salt end with the chemical and oil and petrol tanks there. That was a terrific target. Hull got a very severe hammering in the first few months of the war.
Was there any notion that there might be an attempt by parachutists to attack?
I don't think we thought much about parachutists at the time, because you never heard that the Germans had parachutists, but of course that came in very quickly later on.
Was there any notion that there might be German agents or saboteurs?
Yes, well, we kept having lectures on security, which we had to pass on to our soldiers. And of course, another important thing was careless talk. You must be very careful about careless talk. You mustn't go home and, no matter what you're doing, tell your family what you were doing. It might be of interest to somebody and they might just mention something which would be of interest to the enemy if they were in a pub or something like that and overheard. That we stressed very carefully, and more so later on.
Do you remember who gave you those lectures?
No, I don't really.
What sort of strength of guard would you put on a gas works or a power station?
Depends how many men you got and how many vulnerable points you had to defend. What sort of a strength? I would want 20 soldiers. You must bear in mind that they can't be on duty 24 hours. You've got to put them on duty perhaps about 6 hours and then change them and make sure that they have a rest in between, and then because they'll go back. And of course there are night shifts and so on. We've got the same situation now, haven't we, with the Irish and the terrorists and so on. It's really the same situation. You're wondering if they're coming over here to bomb some particular area, and nobody knows where they're planning to go. They can't go to every area in the country. And it was the same situation then.
Fancy. Did you construct any field works or other defences to help in this work of protecting vulnerable points?
Well, I personally didn't. Now, during this period when we were settling, just the first few weeks, I was pulled out to go to brigade headquarters.
Now, mentioning that the battalion was filling out, that soldiers were coming into it, were they all local volunteers, these new soldiers who are arriving and being absorbed?
Well, mobilisation came in, didn't it? And of course, quickly, recruitment took place. And I suppose there were different kind of volunteer, if you like. But early on, I think that the chaps who are keen, like in the First World War, would volunteer because they felt patriotic.
Did you notice a difference in the character or type of man coming in after war had been declared or after mobilisation had been proclaimed?
Yes, you can't think of individuals really. You're thinking generally, you mean.
Yes.
I would think that there is a difference because anybody in the Territorial Army, they volunteered, they didn't need to go, and it was their choice. Now, to be recruited and mobilised in a British Army after war had been declared, that's very different. You have to do it, unless you're underage or overage. So there isn't a choice, is there? Now, you're pulling people away from their jobs, their professions, their families and so on. It's very different. It's not like going to TA camp, you're going back home after a fortnight.
Well, once the battalion had been embodied, did the soldiers live in barracks or were they able to go home when they weren't on duty?
Yes, there was the Lonsborough barracks in Hull. That's near where the infirmary is now. In addition to the 5th East Yorks in Hull, there was the 4th East Yorks. Now, they'd been a TA battalion for a long time, and they were more experienced than we were, obviously, and they knew what they were doing. And they were our seniors, if you like. They were a fighting unit without having had the experience of any fighting, but they'd had quite a lot of training over the several years, because after all, the Territorial Army had been in existence for quite a long time.
Did they provide you with cadres on which you could base?
Yes, I think if I'm thinking about it, we had instructors from the 4th East Yorks who'd been doing that, and they were doubling up on the TA battalions, and so it was the job of the original battalion to look after the junior battalion as it built and developed. That's what happened, actually. Yes, and I think eventually we got one or two company commanders coming in who'd had fairly long experience in the TA, which was essential. they knew what they were doing.
When you were asked to leave the battalion and go off to join the brigade headquarters, what did you feel about that?
I didn't know what to feel about it. I thought, well, I'm going to leave one or two friends here, and the lads were in my platoon. But that's turned out to be what does happen in the army. Now, I just accepted it as something which happens. You have to do what you're told in the army, and you expect your soldiers under you to do what they're told. So I didn't query it at all, but I came to Beverley here and to find out what it was all about, really. It was not explained to me what it was, only that I was going to be working with the brigadier, and I thought, well, that sounds fairly splendid.
Where was the headquarters located?
It was in North Bar Without, at Arden House, North Bar Without. And we established an officer's mess about three doors further along.
What was the strength and organisation of the Brigade HQ when you joined them?
Well, the officers I mentioned just earlier were there.
So there was a Brigadier, the Viscount Down.
There was a Staff Captain, there was a Transport Officer.
And the Brigade Major.
And the Brigade Major.
And you joined
them? Then I joined as the Brigade Intelligence Officer. And I was to be responsible for the intelligence officers in the battalions. We were to command the 5th Battalion East Yorkshire Regiment, which was my battalion, I'd just come from them. The 7th Green Howards, who were raised round Bridlington area, and the 6th Green Howards round the Teesside, Middlesbrough area. And I quickly found out what my duties were. I had to take my turn after a while as duty officer. That means you always have somebody available to answer the telephone and so on in the evening or during the night. I was a junior officer there, you know, at the brigade headquarters, naturally. I was just second lieutenant. The others I've mentioned were captains. And the brigade major is a major. And the brigadier, of course, is a brigadier. But I realised I was going to enjoy this because the brigadier's job was to keep visiting his battalions. And I used to go with him. And in the early days, I used my own car to take him. I had a family Hillman Minx. I was the only driver in the family, so I had that, and the family was only in Cottingham, so I was able to use that or leave the car in the garage, nobody to drive it. And so I got a special petrol allowance for that. That was the sign of the times, wasn't it, that the transport wasn't available straight away. I remember being out with the brigadier in the snow and icy weather in the winter and got stuck on Staxton Hill. So he had to help me to push it. I got on well with the brigadier. He used to, when we went out, he used to call at Wycombe Abbey to see his family. So I met his wife and that kind of thing. Interesting that Richard Elwes had a connection with the Sykes at Sledmere because remember I went to breakfast there once or twice with him, served by the butler, and so on. I thought, well, you know, this is a different life.
An insight into gracious living.
Hmm. And so doing this and visiting the battalions, I got to know the battalion commanders and also the intelligence officers in the battalions and the company commanders, and not much contact with the soldiers as I had before I left the battalion, which I didn't like at all, really. I didn't want to have an office job. I wanted to be involved with the battalion, really. That was my feeling. You asked me what was my feeling.
You wanted a more active part, then?
Yes, but it quickly became very active. I never really did have an office job because we were in the... we were doing this up to the end of the year.
What were the battalions doing when you were visiting them, particularly the 6th and 7th Green Howards?
They were out training, but the 7th Green Howards were preparing wire on the beaches, and the 6th, further up, and also... doing a certain amount of training, they were all new, and I did this kind of thing up to Christmas, up to the New Year, and then in January. It was decided that obviously that I was going to stay at brigade headquarters, and I should be trained as an intelligence officer. So they arranged for me to go to Minley Manor on the 6th. You've got the name of the course. It was the March, April, wasn't it? February, March.
February to March,
that's right.
Had you been able to learn anything about the duties of an intelligence officer before you went to Minley?
Only what I'd read.
Where had you read it?
Well, I got one or two manuals and so on, and it was a question of, you know, how to collect information and that kind of thing. Well, communications was only the local telephone at the time, and so on, and the old dispatch rider, and there was not much intelligence to collect. Or
did you get any intelligence coming down from division?
Oh yes. Yes.
What sort of thing?
I had a contact at division headquarters who was in the intelligence.
This is 23rd Division.
23rd Division. Now, they were up in North Allerton.
North
Allerton, that's right.
What sort of things did they send you? What sort of information or intelligence did the division?
Well, information on what was happening generally. You know, the top secrets, everything was top secret then, and it was just about nothing really, because there wasn't really much to write about. But later it was equipment coming in and so on. But leave it or not, we were sent as a division later on without any arms. I'm saying without any machine guns or anything like that. The soldiers had rifles. We were sent to France. Not to fight the Germans, but to prepare landing strips for aircraft and that kind of thing. As a labour division, really. Now, and without really any adequate training whatsoever, because we'd just been developing and strengthening in numbers up to this time.
And when you say the brigadier went out visiting his battalions, did he do that frequently?
Yes.
How often would he go and see each battalion?
Oh, he was a TA brigadier. I'm sure that. I'm not sure. I don't really know very much about his history as a soldier, but I wouldn't think that he had any experience really in really commanding battalions, or three battalions, as he was a commander of three battalions really. He was a nice fellow, but it wasn't enough to be a nice fellow just then. We had to be, you know, ready and so on.
What age was he when you joined his headquarters?
Well, he was there when I came. What age was he? About 45, I think, something like that.
Do you know if he'd served in the First World War?
Oh, no, he hadn't. No, he wasn't old enough.